dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. Now, here are your hosts for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk, Shane Combs and Jeremy Ward.
Hello, SVC fans, and welcome back. This is Shane Combs of SVCSportsZone.com, and you are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk online radio show. I'm joined, as I always am, by Jeremy Ward. And, you know, Jeremy, I just wanted to run down a quick little summary here and then get your take here in our introduction. But I felt like, you know, we had an early feast of hoops. If you look over the past couple of weeks since our preview shows, and fans, if you miss those, they're still down toward the bottom of our homepage as well on the basketball pages. Go back and catch up on that if you need to. And then, you know, we're going to start as we get through the holidays here, coming to you more a week at a time and breaking down SVC basketball, which is something Jeremy and I really enjoy doing. And, you know, Jeremy, on the girls' side, I guess it's about how we predicted. We know Uniota's really good. Westfall's got a nice team, off to a nice start. Southeastern's obviously been an interesting team. You see Piketon has been sticking their nose in some of that top half discussion with the way they've played. And then some teams toward the bottom, maybe a little inconsistent. I know it was a nice week for Huntington. It'll bounce back. So we'll talk about it more in detail there. But then on the boys' side, obviously, again, Uniota very good. A great start for Adina. I know in our preview show we had Westfall down toward the bottom. Maybe that's debatable. And then, you know, Paint Valley, Piketon, Zane Trace, maybe with the schedule that they've played and some different things there, maybe still too early to tell. I'm completely confused about Southeastern. I hope to get some help throughout the show. But, again, we'll get to those details later. But all in all, Jeremy, I guess boys league really good, 9-4 overall in the non-league. I know we were 5-2 there at the tip-off classic, and that's without our best team, Uniota, playing. So I guess as I welcome you to the show, I'd want to get your thoughts on, you know, girls, boys, just SVC basketball in general. What's been your take here early December?
Well, you look back to the preview and kind of the buzz that surrounded all the teams. For the most part, I think pretty accurate. A few surprises and positive surprises at that. You know, anytime you look at you know, those first four or five games, six games for some of the girls' teams, you really want to pay attention to the schedule. How many league games? You know, what league teams are they playing? What are they doing outside of the league? Are they playing some back to backs? Because I know that's a challenge early in the year, whether it's, you know, midweek games for the girls or Friday, Saturday for the boys, as this was the first weekend of the traditional scheduling, and just see how they react. You know, you got challenges of, you know, say the Paint Valley football kids playing back to back right off, you know, right from the get go, you know, against two pretty darn good opponents, and stayed competitive.
Don't forget they played Wednesday night too.
Well, and they did play Wednesday. So, you know, that's a lot of games when you see some of these football squads, that have yet to tip it off. You know, it's just you have to be careful looking at the standings this early in the season without really digging into the details.
Well, I agree. You know, Jeremy, before we get right into the stuff, I've got to give a shout out to the people out at Zane Trace, the staff that put on the great tip-off classic every year. And
absolutely.
Yeah, I was joking with somebody the other day. I felt a little bit guilty. I mean, I almost felt like I was doing something wrong. I mean, think about it. In a 28-hour period, I think I saw 10 games for free. Every time I walked by a Zane Trace staff member, they handed me a hospitality pass and said, hey, check this out. Get in there, eat a little bit. So it was almost like a four-quarter game in there as well. You had your cold cuts, your hot sandwiches, soups, pasta. The meatballs were phenomenal. I think I was in there like for the fourth or fifth time before I even made it over to the left side for dessert. So I know you were in you were able to take some of it in with me before you had to go off and work that evening. But just your take on the great hospitality out at Zane Trace and the great basketball.
Well, you know, I've been to various classics, you know, all day events, tournaments, you know, what have you, as a coach, as a player, as an official, and as a fan, and as a guest of SBC Sports Zone for the Zane Trace Classic, and there's just no doubt that they do it right. It's amazing to see the amount of people that contribute and really take pride in the event. Take pride in Zane Trace Athletics, and it's really just a testament to that more than anything. You know, those people should be very proud of themselves. They do just an unbelievable job.
No question. Outstanding. I'll tell you what, fans, stay with us here. During the break, we'll have Jeremy put on the stripes for one of the show's most popular segments, and I'm talking, of course, about our Liar Liar Stripes on Fire. Stay with us.
I can't lie!
Well, Jeremy, Bruce gets you right in the mood here to tell us the truth and nothing but the truth. I tell you, I had an incredible fair, unfair question that actually ended up coming to me since you and I've talked last. So I'm kind of hitting Jeremy right off the bat here a little bit, you know, sideswipe here a little bit. But Jeremy, before we get to that fair, unfair, just give me an overview. I know I've seen about 25, 26 different officials now. I've really tried to. You know, just as a coach, I always try to make that a part of my scouting in baseball and basketball. I think that's an important thing I would encourage young coaches to do. But just as a fan in general, it's something I follow. And I guess maybe just give me your early take on some of the emphasis, the rules, how it's going from an official standpoint early on.
Well, in conversations just with officials and coaches, had the opportunity to work down at University of Rio Grande. They put on a nice event in honor of you know, their alumni that have been coaches or are currently coaches, and schools that have, you know, ties to the university. And through that event, I was able to, you know, kind of talk with a number of officials and four or five different coaches, and just kind of get, you know, some comments or whatever. And, you know, to be honest with you, there haven't been a lot of new things pop up as far as the emphasis or the rules or the, you know, what some people think are rules changes. For the most part, I think everybody's adjusted. I don't see it, especially in the boys. I've done mainly boys so far. I haven't seen, you know, a lot of calls on the perimeter that, you know, weren't there previously. And, you know, honestly, there's probably not been an excessive amount of contact on the perimeter in most of the games that I've officiated. You know, I think really probably more than anything else, there's been a little more controversy with just all the on-ball screens and things like that. And there's a lot of calls and you know, a lot of calls that coaches want coming out of that. So comparatively, that's kind of been the vibe that I've gotten so far.
Well, Jeremy, there's a long list of, you know, particular rules that I'm kind of putting together a list. I know someone had a 5-second call question on an out of bounds play. I know some people had a question on some ball screens. I know people had some a 3-second question, so forth. But the one that kind of stood out in my mind, since this is kind of what we're talking about early in the year, was people talking about what they've seen has come maybe the difference between the veteran officials compared to some of the younger. And I think they even use the word young, talented officials. And it comes from that experience thing. It got me thinking about something in teaching. And this is something as a principal you'll relate to. And now that I've been in teaching a little bit for about 15 years, I think it is now, I try to make sure that I'm always evaluating myself to make sure I don't become a little stubborn in my ways, because I know sometimes with experienced teachers, it's tougher to get them to change in the classroom. It's not that maybe they're not willing. It's just sometimes you're simply trained, or you get a specific way. You've had success doing things. And you know, we're probably even like that as coaches to a point. Have you seen any truth in that? I know you have talked to me a little bit about the word experience and what some of the things you notice now that you've officiated a couple years. Have you seen some things maybe where it's a lot easier to get some of these point of emphasis maybe with some of the younger officials that are learning it a particular way from the start compared to someone, say, that's been doing this 5, 10, 15, 20 years to where they've gone through a lot of different experiences?
Well, that's an interesting angle. It's an interesting comment. Actually attended a meeting with some officials from the state, and they were going from district to district in the preseason, putting on little clinics, just kind of going over the way they expect things to be called. And basically it was all based on mechanics, and not mechanics like, you know, how you flash your fingers or how you give the signals. Not the signal calling part of it, but the mechanics on where you should be and how you should go about calling certain violations, handling the fouls and things like that. What they're looking for is just to make things a little more consistent throughout the state of Ohio. And one of the comments that they made is, you know, for officials that have been in it for 6 years or less, you know, really have an advantage, because a lot of the changes that have happened over the course of that last 5 or 6 years have been a lot bigger changes, or a lot more of them, as compared to years past. So the challenge for the veteran officials to kind of adjust is something that they hit on at the state level. So it's certainly something they concern themselves with. And also, like we've talked before, the danger that, you know, the bulk of the experienced and the really good officials continue to get older, and we're not replacing them with younger guys. So it's pretty important that, you know, that there's some sort of not only the level of consistency, but, you know, kind of that transgression that moves from these experienced officials to the younger officials without there being this, you know, any stigma or conflict about, you know, the young guys are calling it this way, and, you know, and it would just cause a rift between, you know, some of the older officials. But, you know, in practice, you know, in my personal experiences, you know, the bottom line is guys are going to go with what they trust. So there's, you know, the better officials that have been around for a while, they're going to pick their spots, and they're going to work on things. And there's always going to be a handful. There's always going to be a handful of young officials that call it black and white by the book and really don't understand the game management part of it. And there's going to be veteran officials that are much more concerned with game management than they are the letter of the law.
Yeah, Jeremy, real quick on that point, let's kind of even flip it over to the experience. You know, you'll hear me a lot on SVC Sports talk about team chemistry with players and different things, and halftime adjustments and coaches evaluating themselves and doing a better job. Take us inside the locker room, maybe at the half with officials. I saw something interesting. I won't say the game or the different thing, because, you know, there's quite a few people that know which game I was at, and I don't want to give anything away. I just want to use this scenario for the sake of great discussion here, but watched a really, really physical basketball game on the boys' side recently, and, you know, it's tough going back and forth, and it's great atmosphere, and it gets crazy, and there was a situation right before the half where basically chaos about broke out, and the way it was handled kind of went against the underdog, and it really hurt them. And the more experienced team really fed off of it, not only into the half, but coming out of the half into the third quarter. And it got me thinking a little bit about some things that officials had said to me in the past when I had coached and stuff, about how, you know, they go in a lot of times when you see from second to third quarter, they go in and they talk about how they're adjusting and so forth. Take us inside the locker room. How much conversation goes on? How much does it, you know, dictate maybe if you're with a crew that you're comfortable working with compared to some people that maybe you've never even met until that evening?
Well, there's no question that the chemistry does play a significant role. And if you're working with guys that you haven't worked much with, the hopes would be that that you guys have at least worked with other people in common. And normally I've been lucky enough to have that. But, you know, for a good 3 years, my first 3 years doing varsity, I was just jumping in trying to get experience and trying to get to different schools and different leagues and really, you know, just educate myself and really work on getting better. And over that time, I was able to work with many, many different officials. But now, as I've kind of settled in to being assigned in particular leagues, it's such a bigger deal to be with guys that you're comfortable with that maybe fit your style a little bit better. And those conversations are going to occur more freely. You're going to be more eager to ask each other questions if you're comfortable with each other. And you know, that really is critical because, you know, you talk about at halftime, you know, well, the coaches were asking about this. It's a lot easier to go out and all three people be on the same page and be able to tell the coach, hey, this is the way we see it. We talked about it at halftime. This is how we're going to go with it. Because at that point, you know, the coach has to understand he can continue to harp about
just
it.
With you,
it's
right.
not going to get anywhere. But at least you're being fair and you know, you're having that quick conversation. And that's the way I feel. Other officials, you know, they may just say, well, it's up to them to adjust to what we're doing, not to have a conversation about it. And that's fine, too. You know, but that's just something that, you know, that the guys I work with mainly do. If they have a question or, you know, there's even coaches that will ask you, hey, did you talk about that at halftime or did you guys talk about that? At least they know what they're talking about. Or what they're looking for and where they might just be wasting their breath and where they have a chance maybe to, you know, get somewhere working the officials. I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's really good stuff. I think it's interesting to take a look at how officials work on their craft and so forth. And fans, if you have a question for Jeremy on our Liar, you can contact me on Twitter. I know it's really started to grow here in the last couple of weeks as our followers are starting to skyrocket with a lot of game updates and so forth. You can also Facebook. And, of course, the admin one at svcsportszone.com is the inbox. Or give us a call, 740-569-3254. Well, Jeremy, just like officials are going to work on their craft year-round, especially even in the offseason, players are doing the same thing. And something that really hit the inbox here in between the fall and winter season is a little AAU discussion. Developing players and the role AAU plays in that process. That's where we head next, so stay with us. Outstanding email in between the fall and winter season in the svcsportszone.com. It kind of written out a lot of different discussion points and a lot of things. What I've tried to do here, Jeremy, is take two, three things to just drive our discussion over you know, this next segment. I think it's going to be an interesting discussion. It's definitely a part of the modern day high school athletics. It's saying fair, unfair. A player who plays AAU will have a better opportunity to be a great player compared to a player who does not play AAU. So I'll start that with you, Jeremy, throw it out there, fair, unfair, maybe tell us why, and then I'll chime in here and maybe we'll discuss it back and forth.
Well, the key word for me in that is probably will. If it said can have a better opportunity, I would say absolutely fair. But it says will have a better opportunity to be a great player, and I'm not sure that that is fair. Unfortunately, there are so many club and AAU teams now that you can sign up, make a team, pay your money, go out there and play, but it doesn't guarantee that you're going to get great instruction. It's not going to guarantee that you're going to get sufficient time to really work on your skills, and it doesn't even guarantee that you're going to get a lot of opportunities to play and really work on your game. So, you know, I just don't think that is fair. When you consider, you know, you could devote that time to working on specific skills or getting some one-on-one work or small group work with other individuals and maybe become a better player by taking that route.
Yeah, you know, Jeremy, I want to say fair here because I think sometimes people always think I'm the anti-AAU guy but it's not true. I'm a guy. I love the game of basketball. I love high level play of basketball. And I say if you're ready, then by all means play. You know, if that's something that fits you and your family and what you want to accomplish. I think in this statement here, I would say unfair because – you know, the better opportunity is the loaded phrase to me. You know, what I try to explain to kids is, you know, you don't know how to dribble with your left hand because you play AAU. You're not a great shooter because you play AAU. You're a great dribbler of the basketball because you go out and you handle the basketball all the time, or you get hundreds and hundreds of shots compared to other kids who don't get any during the offseason. You're quicker, you know, yeah, maybe because of some God-given ability, but maybe you're quicker because you do your dot drills and you do your jump ropes, and you know, maybe you're stronger because you're in the weight room. That's not because you play AAU. So I think the advanced competition is extremely important. I think AAU is phenomenal for that. But I guess if I'm reading this particular email correctly, I say unfair just because I think sometimes kids feel like, hey, I'm not going to play this sport. I'm going to go play AAU. I'm going to do this because, you know, I'm going to get better. And that's awesome. But if you're not putting the ball in your hand, there's a good chance November is going to roll around and you still can't dribble with your left hand.
But
still not going to be a great shooter.
Right. And I go right back to what you said about, you know, your particular skill development, your agility development, your strength development. I think what happens is the majority of players that really commit to playing AAU basketball and commit to making themselves better players, they're doing those other things also. It's not just the AAU component that's making them a better player. They're doing other things that are, you know, working to develop their game, to strengthen their body. There's more that goes to that than just getting the uniform, going to practice, and playing those tournaments. There's no question that the competition and the competitiveness of AAU basketball is a huge positive. I just worry that, you know, there are so many organizations now and so many things going on that you know, some kids are maybe being misled and some families are being misled, and they're losing sight of what truly makes kids better basketball players in the developmental process.
You know, Jeremy, I can't help but think of going back to education again. You know, you'll hear these this test data all the time that says, like, if a kid gets a great night's sleep and wakes up and eats a good meal and does all these things and has a mint there at the desk with them, he or she's going to test higher. And one of the jokes in education is, well, if a kid gets a good night's sleep and has breakfast in the morning and does those different things, there's a pretty good chance they have some parents at home that really care and invest in their education with them. It's kind of the same thing. I think a lot of times if the kids are getting involved in AAU, they obviously have a family situation where it's taken pretty seriously. It's pretty important. It's a pretty good opportunity. I just, like you say, I'd caution that it's not the sole purpose in terms of, hey, all we've got to do is go play this and it'll solve everything. You still got to work on the game. This email continues. The next thing that jumped out at me for discussion, Jeremy says, what are some differences in today's AAU teams, players compared to when we played? What influence does this have on high school programs? Now, if I'm reading this right, it says compared to when we played. I'm assuming this is coming from someone that's about our age or our generation.
Right.
And it's talking, you know, comparing now. And I guess the thing that would jump out at me, and this kind of piggybacks what you're saying, is more kids can play. You know, I know when I go and watch AAU now, I guess the thing that I'm amazed by is the incredible size and athleticism. But I'll be honest, sometimes the skill is not exactly what I expected it to see. You know, a lot of times when you go to some of the higher level showcases to watch different kids, and this is in baseball, this is in basketball, anything, sometimes the skill is not quite what you would think it would be. But that's interesting, Jeremy. Is there something that jumps out at you if you were to compare back to when we were growing up, or is it just simply, like you said, the numbers of programs and kids involved?
You know what I don't remember is I don't remember – there being, and granted, you have social media, which has completely changed the game. But I don't remember the advertisement or just the sheer numbers of opportunities. You know, most of the opportunities that I received and the people that I played with, whether it was basketball or baseball, that went on that route to play on club teams, select teams, AAU teams, you know, they were sought after. You know, they somebody came and got them and talked them into coming and joining their team or trying out for a team. It wasn't like it was, you know, come try out to fill this roster. So again, yeah, just the sheer number of opportunities plays a huge role. And you know, I think again now, it's used as a fundraiser for a lot of organizations or teams. Sure. You know, yeah. They'll put on those tournaments. So you know, in turn, it's like, well, hey, we can go here, here, and here. All we got to do is put a team together, and we can go play in about four or five tournaments. So again, I think all that goes hand in hand. There is an element of it that's a huge moneymaker. That maybe wasn't there. Maybe it was more focused on the elite athletes. But then again, maybe that's just, you know, the good old days type of mentality that when you get older, that it's easier to reflect and see some of that stuff. I'm not really sure.
Yeah. I guess I look, if I look at the difference between an average player, elite player, and maybe the average teams, elite teams, maybe we always talk about some of the basketball IQ and the different things there. And I do think AAU offers that. I think it offers a higher level of basketball. I think it offers kids a chance to play, see some different kids, see some different styles, meet some different people. But I think growing up, if I were to look back and compare it, we got so much of that from Open Gym. You know, when I was a seventh, eighth grader, I can remember vividly always playing against sophomores and juniors two, three, four nights a week. Mm-hmm. And that was such a big thing. And I think maybe a little bit of that true appreciation for the school or culture's changed because of that. Sometimes if you get a really elite player and they're going to love and approach the game of basketball in the offseason at such a different level than so many of their teammates, that sometimes that's a hard chemistry to balance. It's not one of those things where, hey, I play for Zane Trace, I play for Southeastern, or it's important to me to graduate from Westfall as a basketball champion. It's maybe not that school pride type of thing. So by no means do I want to come across negative AAU. I think it's an incredible thing. I think it's a chance, but I guess I'm a little bit old school in terms of if I were going to make a comment to a parent, especially if a parent that's more in the fifth, sixth, you know, seventh, eighth grade, you know, go to Walmart and buy a basketball, and a month from now, if it's not worn out, that'll tell you why your kid can't dribble with their left hand. I mean, it's just one of those things where you got to put some time in. The playing is incredible, and we all like to play, but at some point, you know, if you see the kids that can really dribble, pass, catch, pivot, shoot, and do a lot of those things, that was done long before the game started. Right. Jeremy, anything to finish up on there before we move into more of our breakdown on the boys and girls side?
Well, just the one thing that pops out is just that, I don't even want to say recreational, but just that off-season play, you know, at the local courts, at the outside courts,
yes,
things like that, where you're playing against
these. Just check it up and play 2-on-2, 3-on-3.
You know, right. And that's true. You know, we basically had it, and it's really interesting. And in our neighborhood, we had about six or eight guys that would play.
Absolutely.
You know, with a span of 2 or 3 years. And, you know, every one of those kids that I grew up playing, you know, 2-on-2, 3-on-3 basketball with went on to be a college athlete. And I just don't think that that's completely coincidental. You know, that's the type of competition and, you know, get better or don't show up type of mentality.
Yeah. Yeah.
That
get
you build.
Better.
And yeah, there's some of that.
TV,
and
right?
Hey, you got to look at those guys every day in the neighborhood. You got to look at them every day at school. So it's not
well,
like.
Well, and if you got the wrong end of it on Monday, you couldn't wait for Tuesday to hurry up and get here because.
Right.
You're going to get right back at it. So,
but
yeah,
but
good,
you know what?
Stuff,
a development, yeah. A better opportunities, and, you know, it doesn't make it wrong just because, it, you know, things mm-hmm. change. But, you know, you just have to be cautious what you're getting into.
Sure. Great stuff. I tell you what, I know we have a really, really high intelligent fan base listening to the basketball shows. Let us know. I know we've got a lot of parents who are in the AAU now or have had kids go through it. please give us your take on this and let us know some things that maybe we're not paying attention to, pros and cons. So good stuff. So again, that through the Twitter or the Facebook or the inbox there, that phone number again, 740-569-3254. So, well, you look around the SVC, Jeremy, we've had some hot starts, some not so hot starts for individuals and teams. We obviously know Uniota is really, really good on the boys and girls side. But we've had some SVC teams flying under the radar, and we talk everything SVC basketball, and we'll do it here in about 30 seconds, so don't go away. Well, fans, we'll probably go a little bit back and forth from the girls to the boys game here, but let's go ladies first. It was asked of me, now that I've had a chance to see Uniota girls on three different occasions, what's the difference this year compared to some of the teams in the last couple years? And I guess let's start on the positive side. Some of their guard and forward depth really jumps out at me. Four or five different kids taking and making the three-point shot, and when they do that, if the likes of Peel and Thomas and Weingartner and kids like that are stepping out and knocking down the three ball, and Valentine scoring on the dribble and so forth, now all of a sudden the overlays and even someone the size of a Nelson become just impossible to deal with. So I would say on a positive side, that's something that on the offensive end that they were not able to do in years past, even a Field stepping out and shooting it. Then what's really incredible is on the defensive end, Jeremy, the versatility that they're able to play with. They're able to mix a lot more types of defense. This was a team a year ago. If you were an average basketball team even, you had an opportunity to dictate tempo. This is a team now that they could almost just come out right from the word go and just almost force you to play the style they want to play. And if you're not able to play it, then best of luck the next 32 minutes. I mean, it's really, those are some of the things that would step out at me. Sure, there's some negative things there still. I'm sure Coach Miller's trying to work out, especially as the competition gets better in terms of maybe some secondary ball handling and so forth. But, you know, Jeremy, as you've had a chance to take a look here and follow what they're doing in the early going, what's some of your thoughts on the Uniota Lady Shermans here as we get closer and closer to them meeting up with Westfall?
Well, you know, the one thing, you know, you talk about the additions and the more than anything, just the growing up throughout the program. You know, I was just curious to see, you know, if they could consistently, you know, score regardless of competition. And you see against probably two of the most physical, if not the most physical teams will play all year in Logan and sure. McLean. They did struggle to score a little bit, and I'm sure maybe that's a good question for the liar, because in the wrong environment with some handsy defenders, those two teams could absolutely give you fits. And, you know, I didn't see them one of those games, so I'm not sure what the officiating was like, but in a rough environment, those are the teams that traditionally give them fits and kind of take them out of system a little bit. But, you know, you're exactly right. When you can defend the pass and not just the dribble with your length and your size, and not just defending shots, but you defend all aspects of the scrimmage area, you know, scoring comes at a premium, and you really just, you know, can't make mistakes if you're going to stay in a game with them.
Well, you know, chasing Uniota, will stay on the girls' side here. I mentioned Westfall just because, you know, they're off to the undefeated start, and they're doing it with incredible balance. Robinson's really had a great start in her all-around game, and Fox and Stone Rock and Mathis and Walker. I mean, the list just goes on and with their balance. Yeah, you know, I was joking with someone the other day. You know, you start naming three, four names for Westfall, and then you say, oh, yeah, by the way, they have a 5'10 off guard that has a wingspan of about 6 foot that can really defend all five positions. So I mean, they're really good. I mean, they're off to a nice start. And obviously with Southeastern, no one's forgotten about them. I know Westfall knocked them off there early, but Southeastern did survive the overtime scare from Piketon there. But you know what Skeens and Wheeler are able to do together, they present a matchup that, you know, Unio to Westfall, I guess, could enter the game and just simply outscore them maybe on certain nights. But it sounds like Piketon almost did that to a certain extent. But a lot of teams at the bottom of the league, if they don't figure out a way to at least get one of these kids under control, they'll simply just get outscored in a matchup like that. So Westfall Southeastern, even though they might be doing it a little bit different in the box score, Jeremy, both, especially on the offensive end, really present a challenge that I'm sure that will have Unio's attention.
Well, no question they can score with Unio, and they have, you know, they have, you know, 3-4 weapons that can match up favorably. You know, as you go in, if they get in foul trouble, you certainly see a big difference, you know, when they go very deep on the bench. But the biggest thing that I see is Westfall seemingly is, you know, kind of grown out of that youthfulness where it's all offense and the token defense. And that's where Southeastern has to get. You can't just play token defense. You got to sit down and defend and play just as hard on the defensive end as you do on the offensive end. And that's not just – that just doesn't mean playing fast and handling the ball. That means making sure you're in position, making sure you're – you know, you get to the midline, making sure you're in position where you can turn and be able to box out and rebound and limit possessions. So, you know, there's a lot to that, and it's easy to get excited about, you know, playing fast and playing offense. But, you know, if you're going to compete – in the tournament and you're going to compete for league championships, you're going to have to be able to do the little things in the scrimmage area. That's not just guarding the ball and stealing errant passes.
Yeah. I look at some of these matchups. I think that's what's intriguing moving forward. I think Piketon's really, really improved in some areas from a year ago, and Lawhorn's been freed up to really score the basketball a little bit more. And I know Zane Trace had a tough schedule with Burn Union, Uniota, and Westfall right up here in the front half. Huntington. Now, Huntington did have a nice week, especially on the defensive end. And I think that just comes from, you know, over the last month on the road, Huntington going back into the preseasons played Vinton County, Jackson, Miami Trace, Eastern Brown, Westfall, Uniota, all on the road. So I think they finally just got to a point this week where they were able to kind of have some success from that, some of that tough competition. And yeah, obviously Paint Valley and Nina had some young kids starting to play well. Woods and Newland. I know Newland had a double-double the other night. The Wilburn girl hit 6 threes the other night. Adina just about got him one down there at Peebles. So some things are definitely looking up, Jeremy, and I think it's just going to be interesting to see some of the matchups and the different things. If these bottom teams are going to beat up on each other most likely a little bit, but as you look from bottom half up to the top half, you saw it a little bit with Piketon going nose to nose with Southeastern. What's going to be a couple of the keys for these teams that they're going to have to do well, in your opinion, to kind of stick their nose in and be able to compete for 32 minutes with these top three teams here?
Well, when you look at Piketon and Zane Trace and Huntington, you know, all three are a little diverse, and you know, I think Piketon has the firepower to compete on, you know, they already have with Southeastern in the right scenario. And if they control pace and, you know, get a favorable matchup, they're certainly capable. You know, they beat a very good Northwest team the other night as well.
Yes. Good win. Yeah.
You know, but there are some teams, you know, I can see Zane Trace Huntington having opportunities to beat Piketon just because, again, with the matchups and the pace of the play, you know, things can swing, you know, to their detriment instead of their favor. You know, Zane Trace, you know, if their guard play develops and they can hit perimeter shots, I think they can stick their nose in it. And Huntington, you know, again, if they get things going and, you know, get a lot of momentum, you know, I think they're very dangerous. Again, it comes down to, you know, things have to work out. Things have to stay in their favor when you're giving up so much size to the teams that you're chasing. You just can't afford too many mistakes, because, you know, there are going to be situations where you just – You know, you're going to get out rebounded. You're going to have to adjust your shots and things like that when you're a little undersized. But, you know, all in all, it looks like we've got six teams. And as Paint Valley and Edina continue to get better, we have six teams that I think as the year progresses, you know, we'll have a chance of beating each other a little bit. And we might have a little more of a middle, maybe than we thought. You know, I think we talk about that gap between the top teams and the bottom teams and how that comes and goes. But I do see there being a little more of a middle and a lot of competitiveness in the league throughout, a little bit more than maybe people thought at the beginning of the year.
Jeremy, I think that that's probably the hardest thing to figure out sometimes two or three games into the season. Because, you know, this team A might have played the two best teams, or then mm-hmm. team B might have played the two bottom teams, and then you might have had a mixture somewhere in the middle. You get to the boys' side, I guess you see that a little bit, because you really, you know, when you think of some of the elite players early in the year, and some of their non-league games completely go off, and then they get in the league play. Some of them still did. Some of them got keyed on a little bit more. It's just, it's really intriguing to see some of the scouting and the matchups and the way that can go. Go to the boys' side here. And you look at the elite players, you'll see obviously Uniota has 4, 5, 6, 7 different kids mentioned every night, it seems like. But, you know, Dean is getting 3 or 4 kids. Paint Valley, 3 or 4 kids. Southeastern's 3 guards played really well here in the early going, as did Westfall, if you want to consider Anderson a guard. And, you know, Zane Trace even getting a couple different kids. And maybe as you get down and you see some of, you know, say like Shanks at Huntington, or even some of the Brewster lines at Piketon, maybe not getting that second, third kid involved is probably going to show up more in the boys' side than ever this year, because you said it best. There's so much balance that if you're not getting a third and fourth kid involved, be it girls or boys basketball, that could truly be the difference. Do you see maybe where I'm coming from there as we get into boys basketball?
Yeah, no question. No question about it. You know, there's been some nice performances right off the bat.
Yeah.
And you know, we talked about that, the go-to player, you know, can you score in the clutch? But you're exactly right. And, you know, it's that argument. We get emails all the time about depth and what is depth by definition. And, you know, we're talking about production, and production sometimes is, you know, scoring 15, 20 points. And sometimes production is, you know, getting key rebounds, locking down a defender and giving quality minutes. There, you know, there's lots of ways you can look at that. But I certainly see that. It's not just the, it's just not that number one guy, but, you know, and in fairness, maybe it's not your number three scorer as much as it is. Do you have three guys that can be that third scorer? Because then you're talking about 5, 6 guys that, you know, you've got a game plan for, you got to be aware of. And I can tell you, I hear coaches all the time, you know, reminding the kids of the scouting report. You know, we talked about it. We got to go, you know, you can't let, you know, you can't help off of him, or, you know, whatever it might be, or, you know, we're flying high at him, whatever it is. So, you know, scouting is critical, and early on, you may not have, the same ability. You may not have a book on them. You know, they talk about all the time in baseball with young hitters. You know, when you get a book on them, then we'll see how they hit. And that's what you're looking at early in the season. How are those guys that maybe got off to a hot start going to react all of a sudden when they're in the game plan?
Well, that's interesting too, because I think that scouting report goes across the team. You know, I watched Shank score 31 on opening night, and within the first couple quarters, I think Hillsborough just had a hard time understanding what they wanted to do with the other Huntington kids. You see it a lot as you get in the league. You know, you get a Paint Valley. If you were to watch them play their Burn Union game, you watch their backcourt, McFadden and Stratton, score 44 together. If you watch their Leesburg game, you watch Swango and McCloy go for over 40. So it's kind of, you know, Westfall can come at you with Wyman and Mink and Anderson and so forth. Bolton House has been a great compliment to Mowry early on. Mm-hmm. But I guess that takes me into the Edina Warriors and their hot start. I think they've just been phenomenal. And you know, we had an email asking me what I meant in the preview show by they play bigger than they are. And I guess the best way to describe that is this is a nucleus that you've kind of watched play together here for a year or two. And as they come back, you know, they're 20 pounds stronger. They're just a little bit taller. They have been an undersized team, and being undersized, they've all learned how to defend taller kids. So their positioning's a little bit better. They hold the box a little bit better. They've learned how to bump a cut a little bit more. They play a little bit more physical on screens. And so, you know, that's what I mean by that is all of a sudden they've learned some of the tricks to the trade, if you will, to be 5'9 and guard that 6'2 guy, or to be 5'11 and guard the 6'3 post. So it's just some of the experience and some of the physicality in their growth. But boy, have they been super. They've had four or five different kids showing up in the stat sheet. And Jeremy, just what's your take here on this Adina team that I guess technically they are a little bit undersized, but man, they play well together and they've really played well here in the early going.
Well, you know, one of the big keys is when you have a little more of a physical presence and you have a little more skill on the perimeter to go with, you know, Jonathan, it's made a pretty big difference. You know, when he's not the one that's, you know, facing the brunt of the other team's defense, and you really have to prepare for the entire team. You know, it's just it makes them totally different. And you know, I think probably this start is probably more important to Adina than maybe any other team in the league, just because the one thing that they've lacked, you know, they played hard. You know, they've had the moral victories, as you know, Coach Smith said time and time again on the scoreboard show. I'm sick of moral victories. Well, he doesn't have to worry about that right now, does he?
Yeah. And
that's the difference. You know, that confidence that comes with just putting teams away. To being able to execute your game plan and then start having the other team adjust to you instead of you be the one that's always adjusting. And I think that's the biggest difference in the Adina team so far.
Well, Jeremy, the thing before we get to the fast break I have to have help on is I have no idea how the Southeastern Panthers have been flying under the radar the way they have. I guess I was coming out of last year, you know, before the Zane Trace situation with some of their players not coming back. I thought I'd have Zane Trace in the two hole and Southeastern three, but you know, as you got into the preseason, I was just looking at Southeastern probably there toward the top. And as we were getting feedback from the fans, you'd start to hear two, three different schools. And then they would mention a couple other schools. And it's almost like Southeastern was left in the middle out of the discussion. But this is a really good basketball team. We talk about balance and, you know, picking your poison. I know the other night Dye got off early and then the adjustment came and then Cartier got going and then Miles gets going. Farrow's been super in the post. So this is a team that's a really good basketball team. And I guess with the offense up, and they're certainly a team that can score it, if defense is going to be a factor, particularly defensive play at the guard position, that kind of lends itself right into Southeastern. Wouldn't you think a little bit? Do you have any reason on why? You know, I've even had people like putting them on the upset alert the other night when they were beating Paint Valley and stuff. And I mean, Paint Valley is a really good basketball team, don't get me wrong. But it's just, to me, I think Southeastern started to fly under the radar, which I'm sure doesn't break Coach Cox's heart. But nonetheless, this is a really good team that we need to start being aware of.
Yeah, and I thought we kind of made that point in the preview show. But again, it's all perception. You know, I think Southeastern quietly had, you know, a terrific season last year, and obviously was, you know, of all the Division III, all the bigger school teams, you know, they were the only one that made it to the convo. So, you know, you return your point guard with, you know, 60 plus games of experience and probably one of the smoothest and most consistent scorers in the league in Cartier. You know, the one thing that they probably were questioning a little bit is what were they going to get in the post? And it didn't have to be scoring, but they just needed consistent play and a physical presence in the post to kind of round out, and they've got that thus far. So, you know, they've been very consistent in the early going, and I don't look for that to change. You know, as we get through the grind of the season, it's going to be interesting to see how things play out. But you know, with just all their leadership and experience at the, you know, in the guard play and their ability to defend on the perimeter, definitely makes them one of the top teams in the area in Division III, in my mind, let alone the league.
Well, certainly. And, you know, we always say in coaching, last guy with the marker wins. And fans, what we mean by that is if Jeremy's drawing up an offensive play, I take the marker and say, well, yeah, here's what I would do defensively. And he steals the marker back and he says, well, I would do this then. And at the end of the day, it probably comes down to the people on the court executing it. And I guess when we say good defense beats good offense, but great offense beats good defense. And I think a little bit in the SVC this year, I don't know that you're going to totally be able to judge the defense on just the number alone. I think for the most part, we're going to be in a league that's going to be a little bit faster tempo with great guard play. There's going to be a little bit more possessions. And I think, you know, you saw it a little bit. Uniota comes out, scores 24 the other night in the first quarter, 42 in the first half, yet Paint Valley's still within five with 2 minutes to go in the game. You see a lot of different matchups like this. What was it the other night, Jeremy? The final, Westfall scored 83 against St. Trace. I mean, and St. Trace scored 78 in the game and loses. So, but Zane Trace responds the next night on their home floor with a lot better defensive effort. So I think there's a lot of really interesting things that's going to happen with tempo. Again, we're probably going to need to see a couple more matchups to really get it. But I tell you, it's really been a fun first couple weeks, and I think we're in for some great basketball. So,
and don't forget, Westfall's off to a terrific start. You know, coming off the season that they had. You know, we don't want to lose sight of that. And you know, just because Paint Valley starts out playing Union and Southeastern, you know, you don't hit the panic button either. So, you know, it goes back to, you know,
well, and let's face it, if you've seen that Paint Valley team play, the more they developed a little bit of the bench, you know, 23 games into this, when they enter that Division IV tournament, boy, are they going to be a bear to guard.
Mm-hmm, no question.
So yeah, a lot of fun, a lot of things to talk about. I'll tell you what, Jeremy, before we get out of here this week, let's get into our fast break section. This is going to give us an opportunity. We'll both go ahead and give an answer on all four this week, and I'll go ahead and let you go first, and then I'll follow up. And if we have a little bit of time, maybe we'll pick out a point or two here to discuss a little further, and maybe give the fans a chance to set us up for next week. So Bruce, go ahead. Here, what you got for us?
The first question comes to us from Twitter, where one follower wants to know if the SVC should use head-to-head as a tiebreaker when deciding a conference championship in terms of co-champions or an outright winner.
Well, tiebreakers can get pretty messy. I don't see any true advantage to an outright winner when you have the same records at the high school level. Maybe for the all sports banner would be the only, you know, real advantage to that. But overall, I really wouldn't be a big fan of it.
I have to admit, I like head to head. I just feel like head to head doesn't lie. You know, football, you're not much of an upset sport. The double round, if you're beating an opponent twice, especially, that really tells a story. Now, I understand there's another side to this in terms of a complete schedule. Like if I use football this year, where Paint Valley beat Zane Trace, but someone might say, well, Piketon beat Paint Valley and Zane Trace beat Piketon. So, and that's a legitimate argument. But to me, I'm not a big point differential person, but I do think head-to-head more times than not would work for me. So, yeah, I'd have to go with that one particular tiebreaker.
Who are some of the players, talking both boys and girls, you would consider the SVC breakout stars in the early going this season?
There's a lot of ways you could look at this. You know, I'll start with the girls. Ashley Lawhorn, she's proven she can produce on a consistent basis. She's put up solid numbers regardless of a competition. You know, probably more in line with what she did in her younger career, and some of the things that we talked about, if they want to be competitive, that she would have to do. And she's put up great numbers each and every game so far. And then, you know, I look at Cole Cottrell. He's off to a great start, shooting the ball well. And if he can score consistently, in that 14, 15 points per game range, it makes Uniona even more difficult to prepare for.
Well, I like those selections. I think on the girls' side, I mentioned earlier in the show the Uniota perimeter kids starting to give Overly's a lot of support there. I know Walker at Westfall, maybe Ward of Piketon on the glass jumps out at me on the girls' side. On the boys' side, Jeremy, I can almost give you a five that jump out at me with Corey at the point there to Dina. And then with all the great guard play, I think the post play, Swingle and Farrow and Anderson and Boltonhouse and some of those breakout kids, I really think are going to be the difference moving forward to moving their particular teams up or down two, three spots in the standings.
What has been the lead headline for SVC basketball to this point?
For me, the boys are back in town. You know, the overall caliber of play looks to be pretty impressive so far on the boys' side from both an individual standpoint and the competitiveness and the elite teams that might be developing out of the SVC this season.
Well, that's another really good one. I'm going to go experience is equaling success. The obvious is the Uniota teams, but with Edina boys and Westfall girls and the start that they're off to, you really start to see it. And I think the matchups as you move down the league, how teams are going to handle the success or don't handle the success is going to play a big factor.
What should basketball fans pay the most attention to starting this week up through the Christmas break?
The scoreboard, particularly the scores. Scoring is up so far. It looks like you're going to have to get three and double figures to have a chance to compete for the title on the boys' side. For the girls, I've noticed that we've had some big individual games. Individual 20-plus point performances are more prevalent this year, and I look for more of that as the season goes on. And again, as we look towards postseason success, I think those are two keys that might have us paying more attention into February and March.
Jeremy, I really think you got to look matchups and the adjustments through scouting that the coaches are going to make. And I think it kind of goes with what you're saying. When you talk about offense going up, don't underestimate the value of going and watching good non-conference games. Because I think what's happening in the league, we know each other so much better. You're going to see people start to take things away. But what's happening, the reason the scores are up, is we just talked about it. There's three, four different kids that can get involved. So you can't really go in and shut all four down, but you might see one or two things. Then tomorrow night, you might see them try to take away a couple other things, and those two from last night will get off. So really watch the matchups and the adjustments and how the coaches are going about guarding some of the stars across the SVC. Well, fans, as you listen to Jeremy and myself attack those four questions, obviously, as just as we all do when we're driving in the car or sitting in front of our computer listening or on our phone, we're playing along. We're giving the answers. I know I'm guilty of driving down the road and talking right back to the radio and saying this or that. And we want to know what those thoughts are, be it Twitter, Facebook, the inbox, or again, love to have your voice message come into us. That's 740-569-3254. We've had some great AAU discussion and some real quick, Jeremy, as a closing thought, just wanted to combine a couple there in the fast break. I thought it was interesting. If you combine the breakout stars and you combine what you're talking about a little bit in the scoring and some of your headlines, as well as the matchups, you know, what's something that maybe just as a fan that you're really looking to see is you, what are we going to be? I think after the break, we're going to be five league games in. We're going to know a lot more. What's maybe one thing that jumps out to you in those matchups in particular? I know you've been really big on some of the big time scoring that you've seen from the individuals on the boys' side.
Well, I tell you what, I'd piggyback off of your comment about paying attention to the non-league. What are some of our teams going to learn in their non-league games and how some of those teams prepare for them that may help them adjust in the league schedule? Because I know, our teams are notorious for playing common opponents in the non-league, so that could tell a tale in some of the head-to-head matchups moving forward.
Well, I'll tell you what, the great stuff. Fans, look on the website. Hope to have the girls, Edina Sports Medicine, SVC stats up this week. Boys should follow next week, and then we'll try to keep the weekly updates coming. Also, follow me on Shout-O-Matic. You can get all of those on Twitter and or Facebook. But a lot of ways to stay up on what's going on. It's really been a fun start, and it's only going to get better. So continue to join us on SVC Sports Talk. And until next time, I'll tell you, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center, for all the other sponsors throughout the website, for Bruce Knox and all the great people at DBK Media Services, and, of course, for Jeremy Ward, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportsZone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.